Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg.
And this is Carl Carlson. Hey, Fred, I was working on a project recently that where I'm going to be essentially training the trainer. I'm going to be teaching a company how to develop their own teaching capability on the subject of reliability.
Oh, okay.
One of the aspects of reliability.
For a second there, I thought you were going to be teaching people how to make sandcastles because you unceremoniously dropped that you were back from the beach yesterday.
Yes. That's
right. So, okay. But
it's a different, maybe it's the same thing. I don't know if it's the same principles or not.
All right. But you've got a project, so you've been teaching your whole career. Is this different now that you've?
It is different because I've been teaching, but I've never stepped back to say, how do I teach? Mm-hmm. What are the principles of teaching? I've done some of that, but not formally. So I'm doing some research on teaching principles and reading papers about it, as well as drawing on my own experience mm-hmm. as to what makes for good teaching. But it occurs to me that as reliability professionals, we're always teaching to some degree. Whether you're in a conference room one-on-one with someone, you're trying to convey how to do HALT or FMEA, or you're with a few people and teaching principles, or whether you're teaching a formal course, there are principles of teaching that apply, and it's a good thing to know and to learn. That's what I'm thinking about.
Okay. No, but it also is... it's part of our ability to influence is, you know, I may not think of it as teaching, but when I'm trying to explain the meaning of a cumulative distribution function for a Weibull plot, for example, and somebody looks at it and goes, well, what does that mean? And then I have to explain what the axes are and here's how you interpret it. Here's an example. The ability to break down complex ideas clearly is I would imagine one of these principles of teaching. It's explaining something such that they understand it. And sometimes we go into the mechanics and the details and the math, and we talk about maximum likelihood estimators. And, you know, most of the time our subjects' eyes glaze over when we get into too much detail. Mm-hmm. But I think that's a key piece of it is that part of our ability to help others understand reliability engineering and the information we bring to them is they have to understand it. And so gauging what you tell them and how you tell them and how much detail is involved and in the setting, if you're one-to-one or in a meeting or walking down the hallway or in a classroom or whatever, I think you're right. There are elements of that we can leverage and benefit from.
Yeah, there are. There's a lot to this subject, this body of knowledge. And if you have only a few minutes, you might draw on certain skills. If you're teaching a formal class, you'd probably draw on all of the skills. Mm-hmm. And so I thought it'd be fun to share what some of those skills are. I was talking about it with my wife as we take a daily walk in the morning first thing. Mm-hmm. And I was just sharing with her, and we were going back and forth on it, what are the skills of teaching? So let me just turn it to you, Fred, for a minute. What would you consider to be one or two of important skills that relate to teaching?
There's like six different levels, and I didn't have the advantage of walking on the beach in the morning to get my thoughts together. Thanks, Carl.
I can answer first if you want.
No. Let me throw you out. What comes top to my mind is that, one, you need to understand the subject yourself, right? Now, sometimes there's an adage that teaching, you learn something and so on, but the best way to learn something is to teach it because then you're trying to break it down and describe it or explain it or convey some understanding to somebody else and it helps cement your own understanding. So I think the first principle for me is don't be afraid of teaching because it helps you learn a subject and master a subject. And then the second one is understand your audience, right? if they're a PhD statistician, you probably really don't need to go into depth about regression analysis and maximum likelihood estimators. They've got that. But how is it fit for reliability? They might not get that part. So it's know your audience and gauge the constraints you have appropriately, because the last thing you want to do is go into a dissertation when you only have 3 minutes, or vice versa, is breeze over a bunch of stuff in a language they don't really understand, and they, you know, then you're not getting anything across. I think it's, don't be afraid to teach. And second is gauge your audience, fit it.
Those are great first principles. Let me build on some of those. And then I have some other ones to think about with you. On the know your audience, I've been invited in to companies to teach subjects like FMEA. Mm-hmm. And they'll say, well, just go ahead and teach it. Don't worry about what we do. Don't worry about who we are. And I say, no, I can't really do that. I can't go into your company and teach a generic FMEA.
Right, here, read the
book.
I need
to have a conversation with who you are, what you're doing, what your products are, what your skills are. Do people have people learned FMEA before? Do you have a good experience? Do you have a bad experience? I need to know who you, what we're walking into, mm-hmm. how you want to apply it. Whole set of questions before I go in to teach. And now that's not easy, because now I'm putting myself in the position, let's say you're a reliability engineer and you're asked to teach a class down the hall. Well, and maybe you don't know the people, yeah. but they show up.
Oh, geez, I've traveled halfway around the world. ASQ once sent me out, and it was last minute. All their regular instructors for this course bailed out of the trip, and they called me, and it was like, next week, go to Nigeria. And I'm like, okay. And I knew it was at a factory, but I didn't know that the team I was going to be working with, they were maintenance folks or operations folks or procurement folks setting up the equipment. And it ended up being a mix of all those people, but I had no idea. I didn't have time. I was like, okay, I need to go get a shot. I think it was yellow fever or something like that, and get an airplane ticket and get over there. And I walked in, and the, you know, first step was like, well, who are you people? What are you doing? What do you need to know about reliability? And then completely adjusted the course, because it had nothing to do with what they were interested in.
Yeah, exactly. And so if you're walking into a class, every time I teach a class, the first thing I do, I try to know the audience beforehand. Mm-hmm. But if I don't, I'll spend 15 or 20 minutes getting to know people, what their background is, what their experience is, what the subject matter, whether they're from the design group or the manufacturing groups or mm-hmm. the R&D. And so that, I completely agree, knowing your audience is essential, whether it's a casual teaching and conveying some ideas that you have or some knowledge you have, you still want to know your audience, even if it's a one person.
That's right. It goes in so many different directions, though. And one technique I've used, and you've seen me do this, is so we get a group together and we say, so what do you expect that you'll take away from this next hour or this next from our session? One way to get to know people is, well, what, why are they there? What do they expect? And sometimes it's a readjustment. Well, you know, that class is next Tuesday down the hall. But you can get this, this, and this from this class. Does that work for you? You're like, okay, or not. And I've had people get up and leave and go, no, this isn't what I expected. So they were able to leave. And sometimes you get prisoners that, you know, don't feel like they can leave, but that's a problem. But the one way to do it is to ask, and hopefully you do it before the session starts. You know, there's one is to ask, you know, the people that are setting up the course and overseeing it, your management team and whoever's organizing it, that's a starting point. But I have to get a hold of the audience and say, all right, this is a class that, here's the abstract. So what do you expect to get out of this that will be useful to you? And that reveals how they interpret the title and abstract, how they're thinking about whatever topic it is that we're presenting about. And it gets a start. And then knowing, you know, the operations or design or manufacturing or maintenance or wherever they're from, it doesn't always translate, but it may help in then what types of examples are easiest. You know, one thing I learned years and years ago, Carl, this is a bit of an aside, but it's related, is that there are some people that are very visual, right? They see things. If you see what I mean, they'll use the word see, like visualize, in their language. And then there's other people that would say, that sounds good. And they tend to be a bit more audible type people. They will listen to a lecture, but they might not make eye contact. And we've had students like that, right? That you think they're completely toned out, but they could recite exactly what you're talking about because they can listen, but they get distracted if they look at you. But it translates to their language. They might say, you know, that sounds good. And then there's kinesthetic people that will say, well, that feels good, and so on. And there's different types of phrases in our languages that indicates what kind of learning style they have. And so by listening to people talk about where they're from or what they want or what they're looking for in the class or what their background is, it helps us to understand that there's a mix of people in an audience. If it's just one person, it's easier because then you can say, well, do you see this example or does this sound right? Which translates into that they're able to interpret what you're saying quicker because they don't have to translate sound to feel if that's their primary mode. It's subtle, but it's very easy to get wrong. And some people then will tune out because they have too much mental load to translate what you're doing. But that also ties into that if I go in, and I learned this the hard way, as I was teaching a class on design for reliability, and I had a bunch of electrical engineers in the room, and I used a stress strength calculation example. And they all like, well, that's mechanical. I don't have nothing to do with that. That doesn't apply. Exactly the same principles, but when I talked about it as derating, they were like, oh, yeah, we know that. That's good. We can handle that. Same principle, but different analogy, different set of terminology around it. And so knowing your audience is at multiple levels as to what stories you use, what examples you use, what techniques you introduce the concept with, but then also to what language is easiest for your audience to understand. And that's, I think, putting it over the top at top level, paying attention.
Well, so very, really good. You're capturing the dimension of the know your audience. And I was doing the research on this this morning on the acronym VARC, which is what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. So for the reader, if you want to learn more about that particular subject, look up VARC, V-A-R-K, visual, audio. The R is for reading and K is for kinesthetics. Mm-hmm. And those are the different, supposedly, the different styles of learning. And there's a lot to that. And that's all part of knowing who you're teaching. Right. And I think that's where you're going on that.
Well, there's a whole nother dimension here, too. But one of them is that some people that are visual are not 100% visual. They'll, you know, able to learn by listening, too, and so on. It's the point is that if you're in a very small group, pay attention to that audience and those cues will help you get the point across. In a larger group, you're going to have a mix. So mix it up. Use different analogy, different stories, different terminology, and so on. And one of the more politically, more subtle ones, and I've had to build a habit to do it, is not every manager is the pronoun, a masculine pronoun. You know, and then the boss came in and he said, you'll turn off half the audience.
Right.
Right. Mix it up. Sometimes it's Sue. Sometimes it's Sally. Sometimes it's Bob. Sometimes it's George. Sometimes it's Sayed. Sometimes it's Mohammed. Sometimes it's Carlos. You have to be conscious. At least I have. I always, there's a joke about there's a car accident and the person goes into the hospital and the surgeon comes up and says, well, I can't operate. That's my son. And it was kind of, I don't know the whole story, but there was a conflict. And it turns out if you default that the surgeon is a man, then you don't get the puzzle. But she was his mom.
And so
it's pay attention to how you use language such that you're inclusive. It reduces barriers all the way around your room. And it makes getting the message across so much easier. And VARC is one piece of that, yet it goes from pronouns all the way to the types of examples you use.
Oh, very good. So there's a whole subject called respect that as a teacher, part of what you need to, part of the connection you need with your audience is built on respect, that you respect who they are, you respect what their needs are, you have a understanding of what they want. And so that's got to be part of it as well. I just wanted to build off of something you said, which is if you have a larger audience, and that could be anywhere from six or above, I guess, but you're not going to have all people that tend to be audio or all people that tend to be visual. Then what I do, which is in most cases when I teach, is I build into all my principles that I'm teaching a combination of ways to teach. Mm-hmm. I'll define the area. I'll teach the theory. I'll tell a story. I'll provide tips. I'll do exercises that are visual. I'll do exercises that are auditory. I'll do questioning. And I'll use examples that are visual. Mm-hmm. So showing lots of different, paying attention to all these different learning styles. And then for sure, the audience is going to grab on to some of those. But if you focus on only the ones that work for you personally, in other words, maybe you're a visual person, so you show examples, but you don't listen and you don't question, you're going to miss out. Mm-hmm. So I think you have to hit it from a lot of different ways to be effective in teaching.
Well, it's one example I've thought about, and I've seen it in how to teach, and it's also in storytelling, is use all the sensories. You know, so if I say it's a blue sky, well, the visual people can see a blue sky. But mm-hmm. what is the wind rustling through the leaves? Well, there's a sound there, right? Is it warm? You know, you can feel that. It's what's the smell? Is it springtime and the fresh cut grass is coming up, and half our audience just sneezed because of hay fever. But it's tick off all the sensory elements of it in order to describe a scene. And that's from storytelling or you know, using analogy type things. But the same applies, like you said, is use the various techniques. And I always wondered, why in college do we just go sit in a lecture for an hour and then go away? And sometimes they'll demonstrate something at the front of the classroom, but very rarely is it hands-on or, you know, in the lab, or unless it was a separate part of the class. The actual learning part was pretty staid, at least where I went to school. It was come in, get lectured at, and then go away.
This is a really broad subject, and I'm thinking that this might bridge into a second podcast at some point. So maybe we can round off this one and ask our audience to share your stories and your thoughts as well. And then maybe we could do a second podcast building on it, because I got so much more I'd like to share about this subject.
Okay.
What do you think about that as a possibility?
Well, good. Well, I hope it's, we might be up to part 10 by the time we're done with this, but what we talked about today is, I mean, you mentioned respect, and I think that goes all the way around. There's all kinds of elements to that. Then there's understand your audience, you know, and I think it's important, and we went through it pretty quick, that it's, don't be afraid to teach. You don't have to be credentialed and master and written the book on it to be able to teach. Early in my career, it was one of those things where my boss said, all right, everybody take a subject, right? Fred, you got ANOVA. You teach us about ANOVA next week. So I had to go do some research and present it in a way that my peers could understand it. And by doing so, I learned a bit more than I would have known about it, you know? And I learned very early in my career that don't be afraid to teach something to somebody else. It's not magic. It's like doing a presentation, but different. Now you get a chance to convey some knowledge to somebody else. And then all these other things we talked about, language and examples and pronouns and everything else, that applies to make it polished.
And as you point out, you're helping the audience, but you're also helping yourself.
Oh, because definitely.
Putting things into words in front of other people is a great way to increase your command of the subject.
Yeah, definitely. So that was basically what, 3-4 different principles we talked about or concepts here.
Yep. Yeah.
We're going to have to come back and actually, you know, how do you, like for you, Carl, is how do you prepare when you're going in? What are the steps you use? And then how do you craft your message? That I think some, let's get into some details maybe. That might be another venue for us.
Do that.
All right, cool. Well, let's plan on talking about this again. If you're interested in the topic and you understand what we're talking about, how it relates to reliability, which I hope is clear, let us know. Head over to ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR and leave us a comment or a story or an example or a question. And we certainly would love getting some feedback or questions from you, because it often lands right here on the show as a topic for us to talk about, because it really... well, one, it's great to know you're out there and listening. And two is that you can join the conversation, and we highly encourage you to do that. So with that, Carl, let's go figure out what else we need to teach.
Sounds good, Fred. Catch you later.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.